I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And on a very special occasion today, ladies and gentlemen, not that it makes much difference to people listening to this after the fact, but we're recording in an evening. We're recording at 9pm on a Sunday as opposed to 2pm. How exciting, well, Ian.
They might care if we sound confused and tired.
Yeah,
because
I do
that's
sound
quite
tired.
Likely. Yeah.
Yeah, we spent the last half an hour actually before the show talking about quite a large range of things, pantomime, and that time I was in The Apprentice, and that time Ian did Gadget Geeks on Sky, and a whole bunch of other stuff, which I think our live listeners have enjoyed it. Certainly, I've enjoyed talking about it.
Yes, well, it's got on for 30 minutes, so if they didn't enjoy it, we've just wasted a very sizable portion of their evening.
Yes, unless they're listening live. So, or getting the unedited version, I suppose. Before we jump into the main news, by the way, Ian wanted to mention that Virgin Media has now rolled out gigabit internet.
Well, I only wanted to mention it because you told me, because Virgin certainly hasn't, and I am a customer, and you would have thought they might have mentioned it.
Well, everyone in the UK apparently now who is able to get Virgin is also now able to get Virgin's 1 gigabit connection, which I did have for a month, and it was very fast down, less impressive up, but it's now available to everyone, which is a big deal, like nationwide gigabit broadband for those eligible for any fibre is pretty good.
52 megabits per second up, if you're interested, rather than symmetrical. But it's £62 a month. Yeah. Which is also the price of the M500, which is £62 a month. And 350 is £56 a month. So if you're paying for M350, you've got to kind of think, well, really, I should either drop it down to 200, which is £50 a month, or pay the extra £12 and get the gig. I mean, I'm actually, for £12 a month, but having said that, I'm not paying £50 a month for mine. I'm paying like 35 or something, but that does expire next year. But I also noticed they're now doing O2 SIMs with it. You can get a 10 gig O2 SIM for £41.99 a month and M350. Interesting.
Not bad. Yeah, I mean, I have to
it's
say...
It's not, this, actually.
The service was very good, and I paid... I think I was paying £62 for that, and it is good. It's just that when GigaClear came knocking with a gigabit down, a gigabit up, and for less money, it's very difficult to turn that down. And the upload, my goodness, having gigabit upload streams is kind of game-changing in many ways, literally, if you're streaming from an Xbox from home, as I do. But yes, gigabit out there, so it'd be very interesting. A lot of new people will get access to gigabit download speeds as of now if you are a Virgin customer. So if any of you are doing that, do let us know. As Ian says, also, doesn't seem like many people have been told. So maybe you've heard that from us.
Maybe.
So that's out. However, we are, for the main topic, going to stay on the topic of speeds in a way, because the BBC wrote that the UK is going to phase out 2G and 3G mobile services by 2033 after a switch-off date was agreed with operators. That's Vodafone, EE, Virgin Media, O2 and Three, and of course the government. Now, we knew earlier this year that EE... more specifically, its owner, BT, plans to phase out 3G by the year after next. We're talking like 18 months away, and 2G is going to go later in the decade. Many other companies have already begun to phase out technology that support those services. And Nadine Dorries, famous author, of course, and parliamentarian, said the move would help the UK make a smoother transition to faster networks. Now, text messages host Nate Langson said, well, said, I, he, oh, this didn't work now. This joke's completely got... Ian, can you read this paragraph? Because it doesn't work like... Well,
okay, yeah. Text message host Nate Langson, who never files his expenses until 1 hour before Bloomberg's financial boss calls up asking why he thinks he's above the rules, said, give anyone 12 years to do something and they'll take 11 years, 11 months to do it.
Yeah, and I was jesting.
But that's a journalist thing.
Yeah, I think it's an everyone thing, isn't
it? No, I don't think... No, it isn't. It's funny because when you talk to journalists... I was speaking to someone last week who's a former CNET journalist, and he completely got it. Like, we were just like, yeah, I mean, everyone does... All journalists write things last minute. That's just the way it works. So I just believe it's... I think the people who have the brains that work for journalism or writing are also the people who aren't organised mentally.
I just really respond to deadline pressure.
Yeah, me too.
I've had magazine features that I haven't written a day before they're due to be, you know, edited.
Also, I don't know if you found this, but I realised, I mean, it would have been when I was at CNET many years ago, I realised that reviews are much better if you write them in one go. So you do your testing, you know what you're going to say about the product, and you sit down and you just write the review then. You don't come back to it. You don't write it in blocks as you're testing. You just sit down and blast it out. When you do that, obviously you have to have done all the other stuff first, so you're always going to be quite late writing. Anyway, that's a side all,
that's
got
that's
nothing
true
to do with 2G and not, or 3G.
Well, not just that, but I mean, I wrote my wedding speech in one sitting. I never changed.
I rewrote mine the morning of my wedding. Yeah, I mean, I'm not married anymore, so maybe that was why. But yeah, and it was much better. It was a really good speech, my wedding speech. I mean, you were there, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, Nick says he takes ages to put his expenses in, and Ian B, this is, who, by the way, is in Australia, I believe, so you must be up at the crack of dawn to be listening to this live.
Yeah.
He says to everyone, all my work is done last minute. That's true. But you're right. This was a tangential little joke.
It was.
And the reason I was jesting about it is partly because, although I think that is true, there is a hell of a lot riding on this that makes the 12 years actually make quite a lot of sense, specifically for 2G, because things like smart meters, which have been slowly, very slowly actually, rolling out, they rely on 2G because they're good at getting signal in super remote, weak areas or behind walls and in houses. They require minimal power, low bandwidth, very low maintenance and things. And the same goes for in-car emergency services like eCall, which I didn't even know about until I was researching and writing this story. Interesting side note that came up in the research, actually, by the way, Ian, you may already know this. As of the summer this year, this is according to National Highways, manages the roads in Britain, over 90% of new cars sold in the UK have a feature called eCall, which means they can connect to a network. It's a safety feature. It's built into vehicles. It's automatically activated if you have an accident when the airbags are deployed. You can also manually enable it. That's called an SOS or something. Mm-hmm. But they rely on these systems. So actually getting rid of 2G is way harder than getting rid of 3G.
And this is the problem. Like, even 2G or 3G, no matter which, there have been people who have called for, and I think this is a great idea, some kind of national network that operates in the frequency band for 2G and 3G, but it isn't owned by like O2 or Vodafone. It's part of that. They all contribute to it, say, but you cut the frequencies it uses right down to the bare minimum and just have a basic network. And then that enables these systems to carry on working, because obviously what happens when you turn them off is that cars that are say 10 years old, because car tech moves very slowly often. So if you're driving a car that's, you know, new today, that in-car entertainment system would have been designed 5 years ago. And if you were driving a five-year-old car, the in-car entertainment system there wouldn't have been 4G when that was launched. So, you know, you're stuck with an old system, and it means that they will be effectively rendered useless. It affects Tesla too. Early Tesla cars didn't have 4G, I don't think. And so had to go back and have a replacement module fitted in order to get all the over-the-air updates and stuff like that. So it is a problem.
I mean, it's one of these things. I mean, it's not going to be a problem for anyone on the who's still using one of the very first O2 iPhones, because they didn't have 3G. They are stuck on 2G Edge, which I suppose is, what, 2.5G, isn't it? But still, it's not 3G. So you don't need to worry about that disconnecting you, or at least not as much as you should worry about maybe getting a new phone.
Well, yeah.
But that's interesting. I mean, this follows... Amazon, I think this is the most relevant comparison to what's happened overseas, because Amazon was warning people in the US who use some of the old Kindle devices that they were going to be essentially cut off from the internet because of switch offs like this and the fact that they didn't have Wi-Fi. Obviously, in that instance, Amazon has a few quid and can incentivize people affected, but not every business has Bezos bucks to throw at people who feel unfairly left out of connectivity by the impending loss of technology like this. So I think it's very interesting to see a timeline. So no 2G and 3G after 2033. And some analysts that I have read around this news said that they expect this to be done way sooner. Yeah. And it's just that
because there's a huge incentive to do it quickly, isn't there? Because then you can refarm those frequencies and make 5G better. But that's no use to the people who are using legacy hardware that only connects to those older networks.
Yeah. And how do you adapt that? I mean, it's difficult with wireless. I was at a friend's this weekend and I was helping him sort out the fact that he was only getting a fraction of his bandwidth to his computer in an outside office. And we narrowed it down to being a combination of the distance from his router. So he was having to use like a 40 meter Cat 5 Ethernet cable. Yeah. And the fact that the Ethernet cable in the machine itself wasn't going to reach the kind of speeds that technically his internet could bring into the house. There's not, you can replace a cable, but it's really difficult to replace the physical hardware in a Mac, but it's still technically possible. Whereas with wireless, you're completely screwed.
You
are. You want to keep that old piece of tech.
But I mean, you could do it if you kept some sort of legacy network running. Because I don't know what happens to all those police radios and stuff like that. What you're doing is essentially you're creating technology that actually still works for some people. Like if you've got an emergency phone in your car that's like a 2G phone. And you just use it in case you had an accident and you need to call someone. You're just making all that technology obsolete, aren't you? So it has to be thrown away. It can no longer be used for anything at all. So it is annoying, and it would be good if there was a way for them to say take a portion of the spectrum and use it just for that. But I guess it doesn't really work like that, because they need those frequencies completely clear in order to refarm them to 5G and such. So
yeah,
you know, it is a difficult problem, but I think maybe it's time for us to say at this point, well, maybe we need to reserve a block of frequencies just for legacy stuff and just say that's it, we're not going to have anything in those frequencies now, you're just going to have to deal with it. But it's a big block, and you know, those old devices obviously use more bandwidth as well, because you know, that's the nature of it. So it would be problematic.
Yeah,
they're less efficient.
Charlotte in our live chat said she's been on a wait list for a smart meter for 2 years, but actually Charlotte's in that category of people who may be on a very long wait list to get something crap that won't work in future, and and as a result be first in line for something that will last for ages. So
that is the question, because I wonder what mine uses.
Mine definitely uses 2G, and I've had it for, it's been in this house for at least I think 4 years.
Mine was visited this year.
I think, honestly, I think the vast majority of them are 2G.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. For a start, you know, 4G around here isn't great anyway. And I don't know what 3G is like. I mostly use Wi-Fi, obviously. But, you know, it's a bit, I mean, it does depend on the network, of course. And there must be some provision made. I'm assuming they all use, you know, Vodafone or O2 or something like that. But
I believe ours uses O2. I vaguely remember asking the installation engineer for some technical details about it, because, of course, why wouldn't you?
Oh, no.
And I believe he said it was O2.
I don't know why they don't just get it connected to your Wi-Fi.
Because Wi-Fi goes down, and if your Wi-Fi goes down, you don't want to have no information about how much electricity you're using.
I mean, but so do cell towers, and as we've pointed out, Wi-Fi is a lot more reliable than no network at all. Like, what happens to all those pieces of hardware when they switch the networks off? They're all useless again.
No, I don't want
to
think
about the future. Well, that's the point, isn't it?
They're all,
you basically, the government has spent a lot of money subsidizing smart meters for people. You know, it's not energy companies paying for this. It's because the government wants everyone a smart meter. So there's been a big incentive. They've paid for, you know, multi-million national news campaigns in papers and stuff. And, you know, if they're all using 2G and that gets switched off, or 3G, you know, then you've got to go around and do it all again, haven't you? Or at least refit a new transmitter or whatever. I mean, they might be modular, but even so, it's a massive expense. So why not have it as it, you know, it can connect to your Wi-Fi as well? That seems like an absolutely minimal sacrifice to make. And, you know, okay, sure, it's not that easy because, you know, people might move out, they might get different Wi-Fi, blah, blah, blah. But it could be an option.
And I Ian B in the chat asks if the sensors on motorway bridges for traffic flows use 2G. They do.
Probably.
I've looked into these. There's a company called AirScan, but it's one of a number of options. So it I think it largely nowadays depends on who is doing that install and what they want to use, because they are much more adaptable. They have the benefit of generally, if it's on a motorway, being relatively clear of nearby obstructions. So it does make things like 3G or 4G or other technologies, I think, slightly more viable. It's also easier to get power to
this them. Was supposed to be part of 5G, wasn't it? It's like the Internet of Things. You know, if you're giving every motorway bridge 20,000, you know, individual IP addresses, then having, you know, having 5G makes sense because, you know, you can, they use less bandwidth, they can have their own address, blah, 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 you know, all that kind
edge.
Of jazz.
But that's at the edge. 5G at the edge, you're completely Internet of Things, you know, very narrow distances, but for communicating real, you know, power usage data back to your energy provider, I don't think that's going to be over 5G. No. I don't think anyone really needs that to be over 5G.
No, not at all. But who knows? We'll see. It's a definite question, but one that they should have been able to foresee. I'm confused by why it suddenly, you know, appeared and everyone's like, oh yeah, this is actually a massive problem.
Mm. Indeed. Well, if you have a massive problem, why not write to Auntie Ian? He is sitting waiting on the edge of his seat in one of his finest smoking jackets, just waiting to hear from you, whether in public or private. It's up to you to decide on the cost and the service. But you can reach him at hello@uktechshow.com.
Nate, a short while ago, well, not a short while ago, a few weeks back, Slash Film posted an article about the increasing problems of dialogue in movies and its audibility. Now, I have a problem with this, and I know you're someone who cares very deeply about audio. Is this something you've noticed?
Yes. To the extent that I've chosen to boost the center channel on a movie once recently, I believe The Social Network, if my memory serves.
Yes, very good example of a film, actually, because that's obviously relies very heavily on Sorkin's dialogue, which is spoken at great rate. In fact, there's some good stories about writing that film from him. Like, you know, his scripts are much longer than everyone else's. And when he sat down with Fincher to direct that, he was like, right, you've got 1 minute, 8 seconds to get through all this dialogue. And that's an end of it. And so people just had to speak very quickly, and that makes things very difficult to understand. Anyway.
Also, one of the first feature films to be edited in Final Cut Pro 10, I believe.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah. I believe it was shot on a Red or something, wasn't it?
No idea. I just remember being told by someone at Apple when I was at a briefing about the launch of Final Cut Pro 10 at the time. Anyway, proceed.
Well, anyway, so the article's good and really worth a read. Nate will put it in the show notes as usual, and you can, you know, search for it on Slash Film as well. But the article lists a lot of different reasons. So one of them might be directorial choice. Chris Nolan is particularly famous for saying that he doesn't expect you to be able to hear every line of dialogue in his movies. He says, you know, you don't hear everything in real life. So by not actually understanding everything people say, that kind of gives it a sort of realism as if you were there, which is an odd sort of choice. But also Chris Nolan doesn't care. You know, he doesn't shoot on digital. He refuses to. He only shoots on film and, you know, mostly these days IMAX. So he's obviously someone that cares very much about the pictures, but perhaps not so much about the sound. Obviously, there's also the problem of actors. They don't always enunciate properly, or they might be doing something that means that it's very difficult for them to get a line out clearly. So that's another issue. Also, apparently, there are issues with sound people not being able to have the access they need. So, you know, when you're shooting a movie, quite likely that character, you know, people, actors will have body-worn radio mics on to catch their dialogue, but that'll have to be hidden, obviously, so it'll be under clothing. So that might be, you know, you might get rustling of sounds, you know, clothing and all that kind of stuff, which makes it even more difficult. You know, you might have a boom, but it might be pointing the wrong way, or there might be, you know, some other noise that gets in the way. So, you know, some people have said that, you know, if you give sound guys more time and more, you know, credibility on set, they are able to get much better results. But then things take a turn for the predictable, and technology comes in, gets in the way. Because there's so many amazing things you can do with audio now, because things like Dolby Atmos have this all over sound that just is remarkable when you hear it in a cinema, the temptation for both sound mixers and directors is going to be to make the most of it. And by doing that, they can obviously cloud the soundtrack and make it more complicated to hear everything. That often works out okay in the cinema because they have very good dialogue channels at the front, but it doesn't work necessarily quite as well at home, where if you're watching on stereo, everything is just thrown into that channel and it might be hugely distracting. So that's part of, I think that's the biggest part of the problem. And then you've also got the issue of mixing for cinemas. Now, obviously people do remix their movies for home streaming and home, you know, DVD, Blu-ray, that kind of stuff. But the majority of the time when you mix a film is spent in a sort of cinema style room, mixing the sound on cinema equipment. So you will be able to hear everything. And I remember when I was at university, I did audio engineering, and part of the way your ear hears, if you know, the louder things are, the more equal you can hear all frequencies. So if you boost things up to a good level, then you'll be much more able to hear those dialogue frequencies, which are annoyingly the ones that tend to get worse as you get older, rather than, you know, losing bass, which would be probably a better sort of sacrifice. It tends to be that the bit of your ear that gets dialogue is the bit that has trouble when you age, as I am, as we all are indeed. So those are some of the problems. There is another additional thing that budgets apparently have come into play. There's something called ADR, which stands for automatic dialogue replacement. And it what happens if you shoot on a set and there's a rustle in clothing or dialogue isn't quite clear, they get the actors to come in and then basically they get a countdown and then they redo the line in time with their lips on screen. And then that's what's used in the final mix. And you can sometimes hear that. You can sometimes hear a line of dialogue that's very clear when perhaps it might not otherwise have been. And, you know, that's often because of ADR. But apparently reduced budgets and Netflix have cut that. A friend was telling me about this recently. So that can be an additional problem. So have you got any tips? I mean, you mentioned put the center channel up, which is my tip.
This felt relevant not just because Slash Film had written about it and it was a slow news week, but also because we've been playing quite a lot recently with changing our media setup at home. It's been something that we ran into with, as I say, I think it was The Social Network. Kate in live chat talked about putting subtitles on in order to help with this problem when the sort of adjusting sound volumes didn't help. And so I thought it was relevant to talk about it. I don't really personally have any additional tips other than if you have the option to boost the center channels, if you're on stereo, which in this instance we were, and you've got a 5.1 mix, for instance, or a six channel mix, a 6.1 mix or whatever, you sometimes can have the option of boosting the center channel, which is often and quite often used for primary dialogue stuff.
Always. In fact, yeah. It's the only thing on that channel, so it's really good.
Interesting. I knew it was mostly that. I didn't realize it was exclusively so.
Yeah.
But you can have that boosted even on a stereo mix, because it's still taking the six channel audio in that example and mixing it down to stereo, just boosting the center
Yeah.
source into the stereo destination. But other than that, I actually have no idea. So yeah. I'm glad that you have, and I sit back to be furnished in these days.
Well, I mean, there are obviously, like, that would be my favourite solution, the one that you came up with. If people can afford or justify having a surround sound system, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a massively expensive one, but it does need to be one where you get 5.1 channels. That enables you then to tweak the levels individually. And what I used to do is bring the left and the right down, because that's where all the effects happen. So, you know, explosions will be mixed onto that left and right channel. And then you can bring up the dialogue, and then you should be able to hear it quite clearly. Of course, you are messing around with the mix at that point. So you're not creating the same film environment that you would have had at the cinema, but also you're probably not able to reach those kind of volumes at your home, nor would you necessarily want to. Obviously, having a soundbar is a big help. The quality of your speakers will make a huge difference. You know, if you can possibly justify spending some money on an extra speaker that takes away from the stereo. I mean, like you said, those things like the Sonos soundbar, most soundbars will take that center channel and, you know, use it more effectively. So having a soundbar, even if it's not a very expensive one, could be a really good way to win on that. You can also add a subwoofer, which sounds ludicrous, but particularly if you're on a 5.1 system, if you don't have a subwoofer, then the AV receiver will send the bass to the other speakers, which could have an impact on the audibility of dialogue. So if you get a subwoofer, I mean, and sometimes you don't need a subwoofer, you could just tell it you've got one and then not have one, and it would still send that low frequency sound out to that channel, which might help reduce problems on smaller speakers. So that's worth considering. But also having a subwoofer is generally quite good, because you get much more granular control over it. A lot of them have their own controls on them, so you can turn it down quite low, but you still get a really nice impact from the bass. Like, you can hear it, but it doesn't have to be overwhelming like it is in a cinema. I saw Bond recently in a Dolby cinema with Atmos, and the bass was just unbelievable. Like, it was so over the top. If it suits that film, but if you're listening to that at home, you can see how it's going to go wrong quite quickly.
Side note, I recently watched the new Bond. I assume you're talking about the new Bond.
Yes, I am.
So we need to talk offline about the last half an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think everyone who's seen that film will want to talk about the last half hour of that film.
So let's revert back to that. What about what about headphones then?
Absolutely. I mean, headphones are, without doubt, the best quality speakers you can buy for the money. Like, we tend to talk about headphones in isolation, but speakers tend to be very expensive if you want really good ones that can do a really good range of frequencies. But actually, if your budget doesn't stretch to having a 5.1 system, then, you know, use a fraction of it, use 300 quid, say, and get yourself a pair of absolutely kick-ass headphones, and that will probably be a huge benefit. You'll get very crisp dialogue. You know, obviously you are still going to be using the stereo mix at that point, so you're sort of going to be beholden to how the dialogue engineers have mixed it and all that kind of stuff. But when I've done it, I've found headphones to be a really good solution. Plus, they're not going to wake up the house, and you can maybe, you know, you can tweak them a bit, you can maybe turn them up a little bit louder. Obviously, I don't recommend doing that all the time, but for short periods of loud listening, it's acceptable to, you know, have it a bit cranked up just for, say, an hour and a half or whatever the duration of a movie is. So, you know, I'm a big fan of headphones. Obviously, it's not quite the same. I prefer a surround sound system because I like the impact of having things coming from all over you. But, you know, Apple and others are all doing such good things with spatial audio these days that headphones can be a really disorientating process if you're not expecting it, because they can be so incredibly, spatial, for want of a better word, that they can really freak you out. It's like, where's that sound coming from?
I had that experience when I bought the Lord of the Rings 4K remasters. I bought the pack on iTunes, and I was listening to them initially on AirPods, on my AirPod Pros, because they were they're just one I was having in at the time. I wanted to watch that on my phone. I know that sounds ridiculous, watching a 4K phone, but it's HDR. Blah blah blah. It was dark, and I turned my head and forgot that I was listening with the spatial audio thing on. And the surreal feeling of moving your head and the sound, specifically the dialogue actually, remaining exactly where your device is as it was in this instance, is so weird. I mean, brilliant, yeah. But really, really freaky.
I haven't heard that because I don't think my AirPods support it, but I was listening to something just on the phone, using the phone speakers, and it's incredible some of the spatial things you can get out of the phone these days. Like, it really surprised me. Like, it was very clearly coming from far left in a way that I couldn't quite grasp just by listening to it. I was like, how is it doing this? Anyway, so yeah, so I'm interested. I think it's fascinating to hear what people have to say about this. When I worked at the BBC, we used to get letters about it all the time. People would write in and go, I can't hear the dialogue. The music's too loud. Turn down the music. And yeah, you know, they're right. That people mixing those TV shows in really nice edit suites with really good sound systems, and they have, you know, they're loud. They have no idea what it sounds like when it gets back to your TV with its rubbish speakers. But also, don't cheap out on audio. If you're spending £1,000 on a telly, you should be spending £1,000 on a sound system, because it's half of it. Stop being cheap about sound. It's really important, and that's why people hate their sound, because they're not spending enough on it.
They're not factoring it in. I just want to speak to people who, you know, who clearly whose diamond underwear isn't as tight as yours today. That what Ian really means is, actually take your £1,000 and spend 500 of it on the TV and the other 500 on the audio.
But here's a compromise. Buy the TV first, and then while you're feeling annoyed and disappointed by the sound about it, save £1,000 and buy some sound. Because, you know, it does make a huge difference. And I've got a surround sound system, but I'm not using it at the moment. I've switched to Sonos. I've got an old soundbar that I got ages ago. And it's very good. And that isn't necessarily... You can get one of those secondhand for, I don't know, £350, £400. It is a really nice solution, actually. It's surprisingly good at bass. It's good at dialogue. It sounds very, you know, well balanced. Plus, it does actually do sort of stereo and spatial kind of in a reasonably good way. So you don't have to spend a huge amount, and you can get some really nice results.
I just want to also, Kate in the live chat here, Snail Scribbles, makes a very good point. Some people are hard of hearing or partially deaf. They shouldn't have to spend lots of money on tech to be able to watch a film. They need to just stop making explosions and music so effing loud.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And I mean, look, I'm someone who doesn't have great hearing anymore. Like, my parents have both got hearing problems. So it's obviously something that's going to affect me increasingly. And it's frustrating. Yes, I completely agree. And I mean, I also think that people probably just have no idea that you can turn down the left and the right channels, and that will make a huge difference. You know, and that's what I'm doing here. You know, if you've got family who are struggling and they maybe have a surround sound system, or, you know, that there are options, you know, tell them, because it is a way to make it better. I do completely agree that there should be, you know, DVDs and streaming, you could have multiple sound channels. You could have like a dialogue heavy mix for people with hearing problems, or anyone else for that matter, and you could give it a massive boost, and that could be something Netflix could easily do, like having an enhanced audio experience for people with hearing or who just want to hear the dialogue, like, and don't care so much about the explosions. That would be absolutely great, and it is not difficult to do. You're not streaming both after all, so you're not, you know, you're using more bandwidth. You just pick one and that's the one you use.
Nick in the live chat has shared an interesting link to a LifeWise story about amplifying dialogue in TV. We'll include a link to that in the show notes at uktechshow.com/... I think the mixer just had a little fart there. Apologies. But at uktechshow.com/episodes, find episode 260. You'll find the link to Nick's article, Nick's suggested article there, as well as the original link to the Slash film piece that inspired this debate. We'll take any questions, of course. Hello.
And what you will find as well is Nate does a very good job of mixing this podcast, so even if I'm a bit quieter and move away from my microphone, you should still be able to hear me, because it's good mixing.
I do my best. I also use quite a lot of automation and compressors and makeup effects and things, but
it's fine as long as people can hear it. I listen to podcasts where it's very, very difficult to hear what some people say some of the time, and it's the same issue. You know, please mix things properly and stop putting music so loud, YouTube creators.
Yeah. Well, any further thoughts on this, very, very welcome at hello@uktechshow.com. I'd actually just like to take this brief moment with you, ladies and gentlemen, you darling people who I love and cherish and adore and kind of admire every day, to thank you for supporting us directly. If you're somebody like KV, for instance, that you'll be getting our extended ad-free version of the show, and you're about to hear this week's third discussion story. And thank you, KV, particularly for your support this week. If you're not a patron yet, but have been enjoying Text Message, for the price of buying us a cup of coffee or something much, much stronger for Ian, or maybe a couple of them even a month, you can get access to our full-length ad-free show. Listen and chat with us live as we record, as Rich is doing, as Mike is doing, as Kate is doing, as Charles is doing and others right now. And get a bunch of other stuff. Extra Message every week, our Patreon exclusive sister show. You're supporting Ian, and trust me, you should see the holes in his underwear right now.
Mm. That's actually true.
Yeah, you could fit a beaver through those. Trust me. Help Ian afford new underwear and save me from having to stitch them up every bloody month. Patreon.com/UK Tech.
Take my jumper off just now because I got so hot under the collar about that audio mixing thing.
Yeah, I bet you did. Well, help keep Ian cool and throw him a quid a week or whatever.
I could just open the window. It's really hot, cold out. So
yeah. Well, it's about this point in the show that we check in with Mr. Tom Merritt of DTNS, Daily Tech News Show, find out what's been going on in the wider world of tech. And just as is always the case, or usually the case, here is Tom Merritt.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, Brian Brushwood tells us how to run an online store during the current supply chain nightmare, why wired headphones are the cool new thing, how Snap may lead the way into the metaverse. In fact, it may have been doing it for years. The EU has a surprisingly sensible approach to defining gig workers' rights, and what you need to know about the logjam vulnerability that's hitting Minecraft and more. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Headphones. You're on point, Ian.
Mm, yeah. I mean, it happens once in a blue moon.
Yes, it does. How frequent are blue moons?
Oh, I don't know. Hold on.
Also, what is a blue moon?
Well, that related question, right? Yeah. What is a blue moon?
Yeah. Well, while Ian Googles answers to my questions, I'd just like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. Whether a patron or a free listener, leaving us a review is a wonderful way of supporting the show. Do so in Apple Podcasts, wherever you're getting your podcasts. It is an incredibly valuable way of supporting us. We are extremely, extremely grateful. And actually, if you are a patron listener, then we had an email that came in over the last couple of weeks about people who love the outtakes at the end of our shows. And we didn't actually have an outtake at the end of last week's extended show because technically the outtake was included in the natural conversation. So this week, instead, I'm including a bit of an extra long one that occurred during our pre-show chat where Ian and I were talking about our experiences being on television quite a few years ago. I'll leave that little tease dangling there.
Full moon in a calendar month.
And how often do they happen?
Good question.
Once in a blue moon, I assume.
Yes, exactly that.
Well,
the next blue moon is August the 31st, 2023.
Oh, around the time they're going to kill 3G.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're linked. Much like this current sentence and the end of this podcast. Goodbye, everybody.
I mean, the end of that show was an absolute disaster, but never mind. We got there.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.